So I was reading that you grew up in Ohio, which of course, home of a lot of different kinds of music, but most famously funk music. And is that what you were kind of listening to, kind of funk and kind of soul stuff?
Well, you know, I grew up in Youngstown, Ohio, and to be accurate, I was not a musician. I didn't even realize I could sing, so I was listening to the music, but we were listening to the Motown, you know, whatever it was, the James Brown, you know, that was my funk, James Brown. And then, you know, of course, Earth, Wind & Fire and all that stuff came out, you know, and Parliament and all of us. Yes, so I was listening to that when I was in Youngstown, but I wasn't like obsessed. You
Right.
know, it was more like James Brown. I think I was like, oh, James Brown. I couldn't wait for him to come out with something. Or Aretha Franklin, you know, I was getting that music, you know, or anything from the Motown, you know, because I love to dance, you know, I love to dance. And I didn't realize I could sing until I was actually 13 and joined the church choir. And I didn't join because I thought I could sing. I joined because my friends were in the choir, you know. And it was the first day of the choir rehearsal. We were singing "The Harvest is Plentiful," and she was going over the soprano part. She went over the soprano's part, and she went over the altos, and she said, "Okay, tenors, stand up." You know, and I think it was about six or seven, maybe eight little guys, little young boys, you know, in the choir. And she started teaching us our part, and she said, she stopped the piano. She said, "Whose voice is that I hear?" And they said, "That's Bobby." And she said, "Come down here." And she said, "Sit next to me." So I sat next to her on the piano bench, and I knew, and I was shaking like a leaf because that was the first day of my choir rehearsal experience, and not thinking I could sing, you know. So she finished teaching everybody, the guys at part. She said, "Okay, I want you to lead this song." I said, "Oh, my God." My heart just like, oh, I don't know what I was. I was ready to run out the church. But anyway, she started teaching me the part, and I started singing real like Messiah, you know, and low. And she stopped the thing. She said, "Boy, open up your mouth and sing." And I started singing, and everybody went, "Yeah!"
Wow.
That gave me a little bit more confidence.
Yeah.
Know? And that's when I discovered I could sing, you know. And then it became all about James Cleveland, Andre Crouch, you know. And of course, James Brown was, you know, the music was the soul music in Parliament. They were always there, you know. And I was dancing, and but it was more gospel music that I started, you know. Actually singing, mm-hmm. with the church. I wasn't singing secular music still. Not that I had anything against it, but I was just, you know, young, you know, and I didn't have anybody musical in my family. That my father had a beautiful voice, but he never did anything with it, you know. So we just hear him sing around the house, and he wasn't playing any instruments. So it wasn't like I grew up in one of those type of families, you know. So it was just what it was, and, you know, and I just... you can cut me off anytime you want to.
No, you're fine. No. Go ahead.
All right. But so I just was singing gospel music, and I became like the little James Cleveland, Mount Zion Church, you know. Everybody were like, oh, you know, and request this other song that I would sing all the time with Queenie Hill. It was called "It's Been Good to Be Here" by James Cleveland. And there was another one of his great singers that he had in the choir. She did a duet with him, and it was a beautiful song. Everybody would shout on that song, just shout, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's what I was, you know, used to doing. And then I joined a male chorus, and I think it was another choir I was in. But in the male chorus, to me, God, those guys, older guys, had the most beautiful voices, you know. And so that's where, you know, that's the type of singing I was doing, you know, gospel singing. I still hadn't broken into the secular music in Ohio. It wasn't until I moved to Houston, Texas, that I started to branch out into secular music. And I moved to Houston when I was 19. I didn't have any relatives. I just knew I had to get out of Ohio. You know, I went to Youngstown State for 1 year, and you know, I was just like, oh God, you know, I just got to get out of here. And I went to Ohio, Texas, Houston, and stayed with some people that I met that year, you know. And the year I became friends with them, the year they said they're moving, I said, "Why y'all moving?" We just became friends. They said, "We come visit." So I had visited them a couple of summers, you know, and that's I think one or two summers, and I would get a summer job. You know, it was weird because I'm surprised my mother. It was destiny, because my mother was not the type of person to let me go stay with people that I didn't really know that well.
Sure.
And she knew them but didn't know them that well, and she would let me go. The summer, and I think I worked and saved my little money to buy the bus. I didn't take a plane. And so it must have been, it had to be destiny, because by the time I graduated from high school, I registered for Youngstown State University and went. And that next year, I said, you know, this is not for me, Youngstown. And I moved to Houston and stayed with them for like 6 months, and then I eventually got my own place. And I was only trying to find a church home to sing with, you know, and I never could really find one that I jailed with, but I found a couple, but just nothing, never really worked out. Mm-hmm. And then I started working for Occidental Petroleum, and I never forget Jennifer Brock. She would come, I was working in the key punch department, and she would come in, drop off reports, and I would catch her humming and singing. I said, well, you certainly can sing. She said, well, you think I can sing? You should check out my sister, Kim. She said, I said, yeah. She said, yeah. She said, go, you know. I said, I like, she said, well, I said, I sing in church, and I like to sing. I said, but I would like to try to get into secular music, you know. And she said, well, go, you know, check out my sister. She'll get you up, you know. And she was just playing piano, you know, at that time in these little pubs. And Kim was about, must have been about maybe 4 years or 3 years younger than, maybe two, could have been 2 years younger than I am right now, and was at the time. And she was a sweetheart. What a great voice and a great piano player. And so she let me sit in on a couple of songs that I had to learn, you know. And I said, oh, I can do for once in my life and stuff like that. But I'll tell you a funny story. So she said, oh, you're pretty good. I like your voice. And, you know, and so she would invite me out. So Kim took me to this club, like in one of the really, like, really with the band, I had never worked with the band before, and they have like an open mic, so I went with her somewhere, and I forget what part of Houston it was, but it was like, okay, a real soul, blues, R&B band, you know, and I went there, and she undertook, the guy, here's my friend Bobby, you know, he wants to sing, really sing, and so I said, okay, so I got up, and I think it was for once in my life, just sing that song, and I spaced out, man, on the lyrics. I kind of like, and so she said, don't worry about it. You were just nervous, blah, blah, blah. So she took me back again, and I put the lyrics in front of me some kind of way. I still screwed up. She said, don't you bring that guy back here anymore. Don't you bring him back anymore. And I didn't go back. But somehow I found my way hanging out with other people that like was like in Clear Lake. I lived in Houston, Southwest Side. But I can't really accurately remember, trace how I got to start hanging out with people in Clear Lake and La Portex, where you found a lot of musicians are like a guitar player playing with rhythm tracks, mm-hmm. or a piano player playing with rhythm tracks, and they would. And I sort of met these people, and they liked me, and they said, "Oh, here, come sit." And I would sit in with them and sing a couple songs. That's how I got my feet wet, you know.
Right.
Started learning to sing, you know, songs with them. And I never forget, it was Jim Moody. He was working at Peckler's. And all, well, some of these was in redneck territory, too. But I was going in some of these places, and they were all cool, great people, that, you know, and we had a lot of fun. They got used to me, and I was building a repertoire, you know, and singing and getting comfortable with people, mm-hmm. you know, and trying to, because I was still nervous, you know, and getting sure. in front of people. But and I even took acting classes to try to work on that fear, you know. So So Jim Moody, I forget, I had been working, coming in, hanging out with Jim and singing, you know, and I would make my rounds because they would all have their little spots. Okay, Jim, I'm going to go ahead and sing a couple songs with Patty. So, okay, come back, you know. And I would make these little rounds. And so one day Jim said, I think I've been doing that for like maybe 6 months, you know, maybe 7 months. It could have been a year or something. But the owner at Peckler's really liked me a lot. And Jim had told me, said, Bobby, I'm going to be gone for like a couple of weeks. He said, man, you know, you should, you want to do the gig? I said, well, yeah, you know. He said, well, I'm going to talk to, I forget what's Henry Wayne's. He said, I'm going to talk to Henry and see if you can do the gig. And I said, okay. And so I said, Peckler's is another venue. I'm getting Henry Wayne's part confused with Peckler, but it was Henry Wayne's where Jim said, you know, I'm going to talk to Henry. So I said, cool. So, somehow he said, yep, I would love to do it. He said, you think you can get it together? I said, yeah. So I went and I did search on all, trying to find as many instrumental tracks as I possibly could find. And it wasn't like it is today. You can get right. anything and everything, like on a, you know. But I had to like search.
Yeah.
And I found things by Elton John, by, you know, Lionel Richie, Stevie Wonder. Lionel Richie had some, and Stevie Wonder. You know, all kinds of like mm-hmm. different genres, you know, Neil Sedaka. You know, it was a lot of different things. I just couldn't stick with, you know, one genre because there wasn't that many. So I started down buying these tracks and, you know, getting these tracks and learning these songs, and I put a show together. It was like, I'd say it was like a 3-hour show, but you only did, you know, I did 3 sets, you know. So I did like 45-minute sets or 50-minute sets. So I put a whole show together doing that. I bought a PA, and I had 2 big speakers and an 8-channel mixing board with 2 amps, and it was heavy too, man. And I'm a little 1965 Volkswagen. I was putting all that stuff in that equipment.
Wow.
I had, but I set it up, and I had set it up where I had lined up the the songs I knew. I would put them on separate tracks and make little sets. And that's how I started singing.
Wow.
Solo, you know. Yeah, and that's how I, and that's when I learned a lot of different styles, you know, because it was Lionel Richie, Stevie Wonder, there's some Motown stuff, but there was a lot, you know, Barry Manilow, you know, I learned a lot of different styles, and if there were some female songs that I thought I like and I could sing in that key, I do those, you know, songs. So I learned a lot of different, became versatile, you know, with singing different people's music. And that's how I got into, you know, and I had never really performed with a live band. That was, you know, and I'm like, wow, that was really, you know. And then I did try to put a band together, but we never got out to play. I was trying to put my own band together. And we rehearsed, but we never played. I don't know. I never could get it together where we did rehearse, but I never got them to play, never played out.
Really?
And I was kind of like, you know, blind, you know, doing things, you know. I just knew what I wanted to do and just and go for
sure.
It, you know. And but I met some wonderful people, and then I got a chance to sing with One Line. You know who I met? Johnny Nash on a clear day. You know, not on a clear day. I can see clearly.
Yeah.
It's going, Johnny. I got a chance to meet him, and we did a show.
Oh wow!
I performed, and I met his wife and daughter and his kid. I think he performed too, and he performed and I performed, but that was the first time I actually got a chance to sing with a band, and that was really great. But and that was only that one time, and I don't recall singing with I might have, you know, some people can correct me. I don't know, the older I get, the more memories seem to fade, but that's my, you know, take on it. But if somebody call you and say, "Hey, I knew Bobby Hart. He did sing with a couple friends," then just take them at their word.
I'll do that.
I'm not trying to you know, create, you know, anything. I'm just trying to go from what I remember.
Right.
But I, it wasn't until I moved to New York. Oh my God. I moved to New York, and I never thought I would live in this crazy city, and I never thought I would love it as much as I loved it. But I was like, yes, I moved to New York, and I started working with, and then when I started working with bands, that's when I really became, you know, the beginning of me becoming a soul man, the soul singer.
Right.
You know, of course, you sing soul when you're in the church. You know, when you're in the church, you sing soul. That's real soul. You know, that's a different muscle that you work. Even, you know, I would even say it's still different from soul music. You know, church music has a different pulse.
Mm-hmm.
From my experience, you know, you sing from the same place, and it's so similar. That's why a lot of those R&B and soul singers came from the church, you know.
Right.
But, you know, I think for me, it's just, I think it's just message. It comes from a different pulse because of the message, and you tap into something else, you know. At least that's from my experience. But soul music, I feel that, but it's coming from a different part of, I guess, if I can describe it accurately, from my heart, you know. But when I was singing gospel, there was something else I felt like I was singing from, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But soul music is to me, is like as close as you get to gospel music, soul singing, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. I'd agree with that. So was it when you were in New York starting out then, that when you're recognized and then asked to perform with the Blues Brothers? How did that work out?
Well, it was many years after I got with the Blues Brothers, because when I first moved to New York, it was in 89.
Okay.
89, moved to New York in 89. And I was just doing, making my rounds. Like I said, I didn't know anybody. I had my cousin here, and I stayed with her, but she wasn't into music. I didn't come from a musical family, you know, even though my father had a beautiful voice. And when I attempted to take piano lessons, nothing didn't work out. It was just like, okay, I try, and just seemed like that door was just shut on me, you know. So, you know, and then when I moved to Houston and started to try to take lessons, you know, off and on, nothing, it just didn't happen. But so when I moved to New York, I started my cousin. Oh, B.J. Lomas, remember B.T. Express?
Sure.
B.T. Express.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, my cousin knew B.J., the lead singer, the original lead singer of B.T. Express. She was actually one who put the group together, you know.
Oh, wow.
And Barbara Joyce. And so she was friends with my cousin because Barbara is working full-time, with the same company my cousin was working for, or they just knew each other. Forget how they knew each other. But she said, she introduced me to B.J. So B.J., it was great. I still stay in touch with her to this day. And she started, you know, getting me involved with a few things, you know, little shows that she was doing, you know. But she wasn't out there full-time. She was doing a few things. And then I started running around to finding where the jam sessions were and the Village Gate. That was one of the popular places, you know, the historic mm-hmm. places that was on the scene. And you can go sit in and then you can do a showcase, you know. So I started doing showcases there. And then I found another place, another room to work out. And then I just started meeting people, and people would, you know, hear me say, oh, you can take your card. And then I met my great friend. She's like a sister to me. She's in my original band right now, Carol Sylvan. I met her, and she said, you do club dates? I said, yeah. I thought she was talking about bars, you know, clubs. I said, yeah, I do them. But she was talking about private parties, weddings, and stuff like that. And thank God for them, because when she introduced me to a few agencies and I started, you know, auditioning and started working with club date bands, that was the beginning of me working with bands and learning the ropes. And I became, you know, became stronger and stronger. And that's where I've actually created my famous soul circle that I did part of my whole show. You know, when I do my soul man number, it's like, oh, they look out for that. And the people that know about it, they're ready for it too. So it became a big number, you know, for me at the close of my show. So I became who I am doing club dates, private parties, because it gave me a lot of experience. And from there, I would meet people and they said, oh, give me your card, blah, blah, blah. And I did. And I started working with this band called Heart and Soul with Phil Butler, Nick Spitaletto, Gerard Guida. And, at that time we had a great drummer named Brian Miller. He passed away due to a car accident. That's really sad, but we had some, you know, Joe Herback, who was Sharon Jones of the Dat Kings, boyfriend. And Sharon Jones, would come in and sit in with us sometimes.
Oh, wow.
I met Sharon Jones. Before she became even,
yeah.
Before she even was involved with the Daptones. So, you know, that band and another band introduced me to the Neville Brothers. See, I was into the Meters, you know, and all this great music. Mm. And I tell you, man, all of a sudden it was just, whoa. And then I was just, you know, working with those musicians. I just became, you know, like, yes, I felt like I was in church again, you know. And I was able to, you know, develop this style. And the other thing that I think was destined, because when I started working with that band, I was the only singer, so I became just like a lead singer. So there weren't background parts on these songs that I was singing. So I had to develop the style.
Right.
And being aware of it, it just happened, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I just morphed into the style of singing, you know, and it helped me to develop this style that I have. And I have to give my great friend, this woman, like I said, I've learned from all this James Brown and all of it. I have to get this woman, Tina Fabric. She's a great, great singer, jazz singer. She said, Bobby, I'm a jazz. I said, you can sing anything. She's a soul singer. Because I met Tina. I'm going to back up a little bit. When I was doing the Village Undergate, doing showcases, this club in Soho, it had come to me before I finished talking. I auditioned to do a showcase there, and that was in a more prestigious neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
Like a classier place. So I auditioned, and they said, yeah, you can do a showcase there, you know, but you're welcome to come see a show. And so I said, okay. So I went, and my friend of mine, she came, she was visiting me, and we went to see this, we went to see the show. It was Tina Fabric performing, not that I knew who she was, but she just happened to be performing the day that I decided to go. And she came out, man, it was just bass and piano. And she came out, oh my God, what a voice, what a voice. And Tina was already well known and like into the she was like in the makings of those, some of these legends that we hear now. You know, she was competing with a lot of those people. She never really got like the household name status, but in New York, she's well known and respected, and she's done some amazing work. So people that do know her know how extremely talented mm-hmm. she is. So anyway, she performed, and I looked at Connie and said, damn, Connie, I don't think I can perform here, man. I mean, Connie, I said, I don't think I can do this. This woman, she said, oh, she's like, oh, I hear you, Bobby. You ain't supposed to agree with me. But we were laughing. But then we went backstage and met her, and, you know, she was so kind and generous. I said, you know, my name is Bobby Hart, and I'm going to be performing here, and I just want to say I just enjoyed your performance, and like, it just blew me away. So now to fast forward a little bit, the two musicians that she used, I used too, Ron and Lloyd Mayer, who Lloyd Mayer became one of my great friends and the bass player, and Ron, who was on piano, he passed away. But they played for me, and I had a great turnout because I was working at Working Publishing. I had somehow started working full-time. I was working only temp when I first moved there, but this company just loved me for some reason. They said, listen, you need insurance. I was saying, yeah, but I came here to do music. You know, I don't want to work full-time. They said, well, if you need to take off, just take off. You make up your time. I said, well, you can't beat that. So I started working at Working Publishing. By the way, it's one of the greatest companies you can work for. You know, the Peter Workman was just fantastic, and his wife, Carolyn, just fantastic. And so I was working for that company, and they came out to my concert. I had a great turnout, and my family members drove up from Youngstown, Ohio, to support me. It was a big deal, and Lloyd Mayer said, man, you what a great group of people. He said, man, I wish I could get a job there. I said, you want a job there? He said, yeah. I said, I'll get you a job there. I said, but one rule, you got to keep me posted when that Tina Fabric is in town and performing. He said, oh, I promise you. And whenever she's fine, I'll let you know. And so I got him a job working there, and so fast forward, so I'm doing club dates. I've worked mm-hmm. with different offices, and by that time I've worked my way up to one of the well-known offices called New York City Swing. They was like the office, you know, one of the offices, and they paid great money, and they had some of the funkiest bands, and their musicians was traveling already connected. You know, they come off the road, and they go work for New York City. You know what I'm saying? He knew. So he put together like this happening, top-notch musicians, and, you know, and I happened to be, you know, got referred to him, and then I started working with him. And so, but you never know sometimes who you were going to work with, because I was like a floater. He sent me mm-hmm. where he needed me, you know. And so I get there, and I said, okay. And I was working with Dory. I was working at in the city at some fancy hotel. I said, well, Dory, who is the singer? And he said, Tina Fabric. And I paused just like I just did. I said, Tina Fabric? I said, you mean, he said, yeah, Tina. I said, is she short? He said, yeah. I said, wait. And then he walked away. And I stood and waited for her to come through the door. And I was like, this is Tina Fabric. And I was nervous. And so she came through the door, and I walked up to her. I said, Tina Fabric, you might not remember me. She said, I remember you. I said, you don't have to be kind. I said, I just spent, you know, a couple of years ago. She said, no, I remember you. I said, oh, wow. She said, yeah, no, I remember you. I said, wow, this is an honor to work with you. So we own this performing, right? We're performing. And I'm singing on Broadway. And so I sang a little bit, and then I gave it its soloist, you know, the whole saxophone player. She said, can I have a little bit of this? And of course, I'm going to say no. So I said, yeah, of course. I said, oh my God. So she came in, Sam, she delivered, she was just killed on it, right? And then when she pointed back at me to come back in, it made me reach. And from that moment on, I never was the same. Wow. I went to another level. And what Tina, because Tina had a way of phrasing where she just took the melody and made it, did what she wanted with it. It was like, okay, I got this song. And then, something happened, she transferred something to me. And you made me reach for something deep. And she all said, no, Bobby, you always had. I said, no, Tina, I'm telling you, you did something to me that night. And it was really beautiful. And so I had developed this style of phrasing. And, you know, I think I would say what she really taught me was, she took the melody and she did what she wanted. She made it hers, you know. And that somehow that I caught on to that, and it became something that it's always that's right to this day. That's part of my whole style, you know, mm-hmm. and what I do and how I sing and how I interpret stuff, you know. So it's a beautiful thing. So I always give her. And she knows I love her to pieces, and I'm always, you know, we still stay in touch, and I'm always, you know, letting people world know how much I love her, you know, and what she's done, you know. So, but that, now I don't know how we got on that. But I was talking about Houston, right? I'm back to New York. Yeah, I can talk.
We were talking about New York. I was asking if that was when you started working with the Blues Brothers.
Oh, no. So I started working with the Blues Brothers. Like, okay, I told you about all the club dates and all of that other stuff. I met people. So eventually, I met, by that time when I got started, I had already built up, a lot of, connections and working with different people and stuff like that. And I had actually was going over to Germany a lot with this one band. And we were kicking butt over there, and I was going over there like all the time and working my butt off. And that's when it was smoking. Like, oh my God. And then my circle kept getting bigger. And eventually I met this guy named Eric Udell, the bass player of the original Blues Brothers. He was an original Blues Brothers, but, he took over for, Murph, Dunn. Somehow we did a gig together, and he said, "Man, who are you?" I said, "I'm Bobby Hart." And I said, "Who are you?" He said, "Eric Udell." He said, "Man, how come I never met you?" I said, "I don't know, man. We both work." He said, "Man, listen, give me your number." He said, "The Blues Brothers are auditioning, and you got to audition." I said, "Okay." And so he called me and told me when everything was going on, the auditions, and I said, "Okay." And so he told me what songs I should do, and I already knew. And he was there, and apparently he had already told Lou about me. He said, "Man, you're gonna love this guy." And so, but I had already met Lou because Lou Marini had another band called what's the name of that band? He still has his band, and so he was auditioning, looking for singers. I think a couple of years before, or a year before that, or 2 years before that, and I auditioned for that band. I didn't get it. This great singer got it. He was more like a rock soul singer. He was a rock, had a really big range, and was great. He got that gig, and so but Luke, the gentleman that he is, he's such a great guy. I'm telling you. He's just a beautiful guy. He called and said, "Bobby, I just called you. He said, we loved you. It was a hard decision to make, and you were right up at the top." He said, "And we love what you were doing." He said, "But we did go with this what's his name? I can't think of his name. Because he had more of that rock sound, and he said, "But just trust me, everybody loved you, I said, "Oh, thank you. That made me feel good, mm-hmm. I'm learning, you don't get attached, just move on." And so when I auditioned for the Blues Brothers, when I was walking out the room, I said, "Lou, now don't make the same mistake."
Right.
He looked at me and smiled, and then he called, I think a couple of weeks passed, he called me and said, "Bob, I'm just calling to say that everybody loves you, man, and you're going to be touring with the original Blues Brothers."
Wow.
So that was that was great. And so Eric Udell was responsible for that. And I don't know, Eric Udell, unfortunately, 2 years ago, was walking up Lexington Avenue and collapsed.
Oh, wow.
And, and nobody even knew he was in the hospital. And this woman saw him fall, and she called the paramedics, and they came and took him into the hospital, and he was in a coma, and nobody even knew. And it was the caseworker that was going through his stuff, because she said, they didn't know who to call. So she kept going through his stuff, and he had his passport with him, and apparently some other, stuff that had original Blues Brothers. And it was so much, she said, "Let me just go Google the Facebook or something,
mm-hmm.
And she went to the Facebook and sent a message on Facebook, and this guy named David takes care of our Facebook page, and he sent Tommy Pipes, who was another singer,
right.
There's three of us who sent two lead singers. So Tommy got the message from David, and Tommy thought it was like, "Oh, this is he said, "No, it's probably just some scam." But John Chope, the second guitar player of the original Blues Brothers, was with him. And he said, "Well, you should call. You never know. You can just call and find out, make sure." And he called, and come to find out that it was legit. And he emailed all of us, and we all went up there day one, and we stayed with everybody. He had people up there. We made sure we contacted his sister and his brother. One sister was in London, Amsterdam, and she came, and her other sister from California came. The brother has a fear of flying, so he couldn't come. And we were always up there. He always had somebody up there, but he never came out of the coma, and he died like 4 days later. And
That's
it was
awful.
Just so shocking and so sad. And I still haven't processed Eric's death because it doesn't seem like it's real. you know. But Eric, and Eric would sub in my band too. Like if Gene Torres, my bass player, if he couldn't do, Eric was on the case. Eric was the number one call, you know. And you know, I love him, and he was just a great, great guy, you know, and a great friend. And we lost him, so that's how I became. I got involved with the original Blues Brothers, and it's been one of the best ships you can ever sail. One of the best ships you can ever sail on.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you do a phenomenal job. I mean, everybody, like you mentioned, Tommy Pipes, and you got Rob Paparazzi does the harmonica.
Rob Paparazzi, yeah,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, all you guys are just so great together. And I'm obviously a big fan of the original Blues Brothers, John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd, and I always thought, no one can replace these guys. But you guys do a great show, and it's not so much that you're replacing them or mimicking them, it's just you're doing your own thing, and you got that original band backing you, and it's just, everything just sounds fantastic.
Right, and that's what we try to make sure everybody knows, that we're not really cloning them. We keep the essence of what they did there, you know, the music, and we wear the black suits and the white shirts and the glass and the hat. But it's a different type of show, you know, and it's a great one, and it complements, you know, I think it complements them too, you know.
Completely.
It doesn't take away from what they did, but it lets them know, hey, you know, what they did was part of it's history, you know.
Right.
And we keeping it alive, and working with Tommy McDonald and Rob Paparazzi, it's like the best. It was the best, because Tommy was the original singer, you know, when after John and, well, I think there was another singer before after Dan and,
yeah,
and John.
I think Larry Thurston.
Another singer.
I think
he
was doing it for a little while.
Yes. Yeah, that's right, Larry Thurston. And then Tommy came into the mix, and he was there for a good while. Then when he left, Rob Paparazzi came into the mix. And then when he left, they had tried another singer, but I don't think it worked out. And then he auditioned. That's when the audition came up. And then Johnny Rosh and I became the two lead singers, you know. And then when Johnny left, he was rotating between Tommy and Rob, you know. So they would come up, but I was still there, you know. I was there working with one of them, and it takes them working with those two guys was just fantastic. Oh my God! And so somehow Lou got this wonderful idea. I said, let me just use all three of those singers. And it was the best decision he ever made, because we worked so well together. You know, it was like,
I really do.
It just flowed. Yeah, so organic, you know. Yeah, so organic. And of course, working with Steve Cropper is just like as good as it gets. And Lou and Marini is just a gem, you know. There's nobody cooler than Lou, though. So you don't get out much.
So, yeah, well, you're right. But, you got that right.
Yeah, Lou is the coolest, you know, and nobody's going to outdress him, and nobody's going to outwalk him. Okay, that brother can walk.
That's funny.
And he can tell a joke. Now, he gets a run for his money when it comes to joke, because Steve Cropper tells a joke too. But, you know, you can just be on the tour bus and let them two go at it, and they just have you laughing for days, man. You know, they're great, yeah. Yeah, so it's, you know, all the guys, John Jope, you know, the second guitar player, Leon Pendarvis, who's fantastic, you know, from Saturday Night Live.
Right, right.
He's a musical director. He's always, like, keeping everybody. Eric always told me, Bobby, if you ever get lost, look at Leon. He'll get you. And he was right. And then Rusty Cloud does it if Leon doesn't do it, you know. And then you have Lee Finkelstein on drums. He has his own band, Funk Philharmonic. They do Earth, Wind, and Fire and Tower Power. And I don't want to send Tower Power, and I don't want to send Earth, Wind, and Fire. But I'm telling you, man, when that band is up on that stage, you close your eyes, you don't know who's up there, okay?
Sure.
Because they got that music down.
Heck yeah.
And they actually used Tommy Bowes, who was one of the original singers of one of the singer, lead singers for Tower Power. You know, he's in that funk. You know, and Brent Carter, too. So no wonder, okay? Brent Carter actually was recorded with and we played with Tower Power for years. So they, but Brent travels with, he's with in Simply Red now, I think, one of the other, not Simply Red, he's with another band now, it'll come to me. But Tommy Bowes is still with them, so that's a great band. So Lee Finkelstein is on drums, Larry Farrell, he's the trombone player, he's great, but we're using, right now, he might not make this tour, but he's with the band. And then you have he's going to kill me if I take out on his name. But then I think I named everybody except Oh, Steve Howard,
okay,
out of Texas. He took over for Alan Rubin, and he's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful soul. We just so fun. The whole band is like a real brother, you know, brotherly love,
right,
man. And they all, we break bread together, you know. We all do our own thing, but we all come together and we break bread and we step on that stage. It's like, oh, man, it's like a train. Get on board, you know. Get on board or you're going to get run over. You hear me?
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, yeah.
Yeah, well,
and
go ahead.
No, I was trying to say, so I've been with them for quite a while now, and we're going to go to Canada in March for one to do a benefit, and then we're supposed to have a tour coming up in July and August.
You know? Awesome. Well, I'm very much looking forward to that, and Bobby, I want to congratulate you on all your success.
Yeah, you know, and then we got, and then my band, of course, Bobby Harden and Soul Purpose Band, you know, and my two CDs that I come with. We're going to be recording a new record in March.
Nice.
We're going to start going into the studio because my drummer, Richie Gonzalez, said, Bobby, the studio is going to be up and running so we can go in there and really work really hard. But the other thing I'm doing is with the, you know, Charles Bradley. Charles Bradley, who, you know Charles Bradley.
I know Jerry, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, he passed away. He was with the Death on the Daptones record label, which Sharon Jones,
right,
and who I love. She was great.
She was
great.
Incredible.
I didn't get a chance to see her. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to see much of her when she started really touring with them.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we back in the day, she was, you know, and we did some club dates together, and she'd sit in with my band. And if you ever go to YouTube, click on LaBarback, you'll see and Bobby Harden, you see Sharon Jones with me on stage. She was singing Aretha Franklin. I had my dreadlocks.
Oh wow! I'll have to look at that.
Kicking butt. Yeah, but so I'm recording with, I just recorded some songs with them too. So hopefully they'll release that, and I'll be doing some shows with them. And then I got my own band, of course, and trying to enjoy my journey, man. You know, I don't know how all this is going to play out, but
right,
I have to say I love everything I'm doing. It's just a beautiful thing, and that's what I love most about my career. I love what I'm doing. I'm happy. And if nothing else comes out of it and I'm just enjoying what I'm doing, I think I'm successful in life, you know, because I meet so many wonderful people and all over from the little bars, restaurant gigs, to the big stages,
yeah,
to tours, you know, it's just like, it's just great, you know, it's really great. And I think working with I call it the Charles Bradley Band because that was his band and they,
sure,
were all on the, but they got their own distribution deal and they got a lot of stuff already in place. And I think they're going to release, I think, a single. Or, you know, with the A and B side, and we're already, I think, recorded five. I co-wrote like three or four songs with them, and we're going to be putting stuff out, you know, and so it'd be great to work with them, and it would help me with my name, get more recognition as,
yeah,
an artist too, which I think would help Soul Purpose Band too, you know, that band, you know, so because I don't want to stop touring with them too. I want to create some work for them too, tour. So,
mm-hmm,
yeah, I want the whole pie and eat it all too. You know, make it all, make everybody do a little bit of it all. But that's why, like, who wants a record company? Because then they start saying they pigeonhole you. You know, like,
right,
just, you know, keep it. You know, I work with them. I'm a freelancer. Okay, it's like the Blues Brothers. You know, one thing about the Blues Brothers: if you're available, you go. If you're not available, it's okay. They got two other singers. You come out on the next,
right,
time. You know what I'm saying? So that's the beauty of them, you know. It's really beautiful. I'm doing all this talking. You have any more questions for me?
No, that's all I got for you, Bobby. No. I was just going to say I look forward to your new album that you're working on, and hopefully we can talk again when that starts getting wrapped up.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me ask you something, though. On River of Soul, what songs do you like? The River of Soul, the latest one.
I liked Where's the Love was one of my favorites. That one was really good. And let me.
Yeah, that's one of the favorite ones of the band. Mm-hmm. We do that. The songs go over really live. Go well, you know, when they're performing them live, people really. It's strong. This live show is stronger than the record.
Yeah.
You know, I have to admit that because it's just energy and people really get it. So it's the music. The whole show goes over very well. I've been performing at this Minton's Playhouse up in Harlem, and it's like one of the historic landmark clubs. All the great blues and people perform there, and they can't tear the place down because it's a historic landmark. And they love my band up there, and it's great. And and I'm just happy. But the whole show, all the songs, the ones I do from both each record, the first one and the second one. And then I also do Itch and Scratch from the Blues Brothers.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Water Running. Yeah, so I perform those too, you know. So it's all good, you know what I'm saying? And I really appreciate you playing. Are you playing, which ones are you playing on your station? The Itch and Scratch? You Left the Water Running?
Well, what I like to do is when I'm like editing our interview, I just kind of see which tracks, you know, sound good behind it and what kind of goes good together. So I've got a few I'm going to choose from. I'm not sure exactly which ones yet, but... And as soon as I'm done editing this and everything, I can send that over to you.
Okay. And which ones work for your, you know, like the regular ones from, which ones work for you, you know, your station, you know, like from the River of Soul and the Soul Purpose record?
They would all work. I mean, they would all fit the format just fine. So just a matter of re-listening to all of them and kind of seeing what, you know, personally I think would sound good with it. So we'll see.
Okay. Oh, yeah, let me tell your fans now. Now, don't forget, you can find, if you like the interview and you like the music plan, please, you can download those tracks from on iTunes. You can get the whole CD from cdbaby.com. And you can always go to my website, www.bobbyharden, that's HARDENBOBBY.com, and sign up to get the newsletter, and I'll add you into. So when I'm performing, you'll know exactly where I will be, and when I'm touring and coming to a city close to you, you'll know where. So please sign up to get the newsletter and please go to iTunes and download, you know, one or two tracks, you know.
Perfect.
And yeah, that's it, Sammy.
Great. Well,
thank you so much, Sammy.
Absolutely.
And stay in touch, you know.
I will, I promise.